It was her task to keep everyone amused and interested so that the long absences of certain key guests would not be noticed. The work upstairs continued undisturbed, and the final draft of the necessary document was at last completed. It was prepared in the palace by the most astute minds in Europe, but it was essentially and basically for the humble, not for the great. It was a noble plan, prepared by those who were noble in spirit, and it linked a free people to a free world. It was to be a declaration of independence for all Europe, but it never reached the eyes or ears or hearts of the very people it might have set free from limitations. At the very end, when the people were crying for bread, Marie Antoinette was urged to give them more than bread, to give them the good earth itself and its abundance, for that is what the document would have provided. But Marie was a queen, carefully schooled in the ways of a queen. She knew nothing about the ways of a peasant mob. She was easily disturbed by their noise, their jeers, their uncleanliness. The document was beyond her scope of understanding. The people had asked for bread, and she had suggested cake. In utter confusion, she attempted to flee from the scene of her great error. Long years after the guillotine had taken its toll, and peace had settled over Paris once again, a clerk placed the document of the Versailles group in a proper file in the public library. Sometimes American visitors in Paris call to see it and to ponder over its quaint script. But the message is not quaint. It is still as fresh and bright as the high vision that Henry George brought with him into embodiment in America. The ideals which had been set forth when Henry George worked with the Versailles group remained so crystal clear in his consciousness that his Progress and Poverty is almost a duplicate of the Versailles document. Leadbeater, C.W. Theosophical Publishing Co., Wheaton, Illinois, The Chakras, Adia Edition Thought Forms, in collaboration with Annie Besant Mann, Visible and Invisible Occult Chemistry, 1951 edition Mann. Where, whence and whither? Here is a reading feast that includes some of the very choicest Piscean-age ingredients. Some of the statements in the two books on that most puzzling of subjects, man, may be confusing to the Aquarian disciple. But the reader should keep in mind one salient fact. When these great spiritual pioneers were plowing a path through a world atmosphere which reeked with the stuffy smugness of Victorianism, they were working, blind, trying to feel their way. If the furrow they ploughed is not quite straight, it only means that Aquarian disciples must smooth out the rough places. A reading of these books will orient the alert disciple as to where to begin his work. Remember that this globe and all inhabitants, both in embodiment and between embodiments, have been under planetary law until very recently. When spaceships began to be seen frequently, and the attention of the people became focused on things interplanetary, a new state of consciousness was born. Nearly 10 billion souls associated with evolution on this planet must now get themselves into a state of mind wherein they can freely accept, not only space visitors from other planets, but also the complete freedom from limitations which cosmic law will bring to this planet. We can no longer accept death as a natural event here on Earth, because our new neighbors on other planets do not know limitations such as disease, and death from disease. They do change physical bodies from time to time, but the change is completely under control of the individual. It is made for some specific reason and is not regarded as a matter of distress for anyone. Likewise, we can no longer accept the scientific methods used on this planet, and the long and costly experimental research projects. It is an utter waste of time to spend years in a laboratory trying to find an answer to a certain problem, when a few minutes spent in communication with scientists on another planet would result in the needed data. Those students who would like to start some fascinating scientific explorations immediately, can do no better than get acquainted with Leadbeater's occult chemistry. Leadbeater and Annie Besant worked in close collaboration on the original volume, which is out of print. But when the Hindu disciple, C. Jinnarajadasa, grew to maturity and became head of the Theosophical Society, he revised occult chemistry and brought it out in a large new edition in 1951. There is a very interesting story connected with these two men. The Leadbeater family originally lived in England, and the father, a railroad builder, was called to South America to supervise a new line which was being constructed in forested territory inhabited only by wandering Indian tribes. There were two sons in the family, Charles and a young brother. One day when the father planned to visit the construction site for a couple of hours and then return directly to his home in a nearby town, he took the two boys with him. Shortly after they arrived, the construction camp was attacked by hostile Indians, and the younger boy was killed. Many years passed and, back in England again, Charles completed his education and entered the ministry. He was assigned to a parish and was regarded as highly successful in his chosen work. One evening he happened to go to a lecture which was given in London by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. He sat listening in spellbound attention, and when at the end of the lecture Madame Blavatsky announced that she was leaving the following day for India, Charles Leadbeater determined that he would accompany her, and her small group of disciples. Within a matter of hours, Charles Leadbeater changed the entire course of his life. He left everything. Home, church, family, friends, financial security, and even his native country. With only his personal possessions and a completely new state of consciousness, he joined the group for the long boat journey. On the boat he had many conversations with Madame Blavatsky. With this brief instruction he arrived in India and embarked upon a new way of life that was almost the exact opposite of the one he had so abruptly left behind. He had been in India only a short time when he discovered why he had made the journey. The parents of a small boy in a distant village sent for him. They had discovered that their little son had a certain destiny planned when he came into incarnation, and he was to be placed in the care of Charles Leadbeater in order to receive proper training. It was in this manner that the little boy who was killed by the Indians in South America, was restored to his older brother, Charles. These days we are living through now are the most spiritually exciting we have known on this globe for millions of years, particularly in America. In times past, about the only opportunities that disciples had to get together in mutual recognition and compare notes, was between embodiments or during sleeping hours when they met in their subtle bodies. But now, since the beginning of this century, they are being gathered together again, and this time on the physical plane. Those who went out of embodiment, even recently, are returning to help establish Saint Germain's new golden age civilization. America is the heart center, and as the years pass, disciples who have served the forces of light down through long ages, will meet here in physical embodiment, but this time they will recognize each other's historical accomplishments. It is around these historical accomplishments that the new history books will be written. All school children should bless this happy day when those frightful Piscean compilations of dates, 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 and wars, 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 can be tossed into the nearest trash basket. If book-burning fiestas should become the vogue, this is one time in history when they will be justified, and a big of delicious fuel could be contributed in the form of many, many magazines, newspapers, and other periodicals which serve as shockers to jolt man's emotional body and force it to absorb more astral debris. Luke, ADK 2502 North Calvert Street, Baltimore 18, Maryland, Law of Life, Book I, Law of Life, Book 2. Here is the new textbook for the Aquarian Age, and it can be truly said that a book of this kind has never before been published. It is the Aquarian Age in essence, expressed in lucid words. Without a single quibble, it presents straightforward rules for traveling the swift evolutionary road that will lead us all away from Earth's classrooms to the distant stars. No longer will the student or seeking aspirant have time to spend laborious years in the pursuit of truth. The pace will be swift and one-pointed in this Aquarian cycle, with all paths leading to the one glorious goal of the ascension. In this simple but magnificent work by A.D.K. Luke, the answers to life's problems stand clear and serene above the Piscean muddle of everyday living. With these two volumes at hand, one can forget all yesterdays and step over into the new Aquarian way of life with confidence and joy. Specifically, Law of Life presents unified teachings of principles. No matter where you stand at the moment, and regardless of previous training, you can apply these unified teachings without the slightest trepidation, because they are solidly rooted in principles, they are not tainted by personal opinions. Yet they are vital and refreshing, and have the appealing warmth of heart quality that makes them a joy to read over and over. The inner heart's search is for truth, not fiction. The great universal miracle of creation, the operation of the universe, and the principles which govern all, are truth in action. This is the truth that nourishes the eternal heart flame. Law of life gives methods of practical application of laws which govern every phase of daily living, in every walk of life. These laws can be applied to adjust all your affairs of the day, from the moment you waken in the morning until you sleep at night. It is all the, to be applied to family and home life, to business, health, and supply, to friends, to strangers, and to all world events, from weather to politics. Life's essentials are no longer a mystery, and reading of these two books will tell you why we are here, where we came from, how we individualized, what we are meant to do, where we are going and exactly what the goal is, and how we may attain it. The real you can be drawn forth into expression through applying the laws of life, not at some particular moment or hour of the day, but all day and every day. Latent talents and powers from within can be drawn forth into outer activity, and any task completed in joy and in triumph. Law of life is based on retreat work, formerly offered only to those who gave up all outer world activity and devoted their entire time to cloistered instruction supervised by ascended masters. In the Aquarian age, the student will remain right where he is. In home, family, business, nation. And yet receive retreat training. In other words, all persons will be students, and the entire globe will constitute one vast classroom offering retreat studies. Law of Life is therefore a retreat textbook, available for immediate use in the outer world. It gives explanations of the sacred fire, of the actions of the flame, of the word of power. IAM. It explains the presence, the use of the transmuting violet flame, the organization of the hierarchy, and the location of retreats which are now used by students during their sleeping hours when their subtle bodies are freed from the physical. Law of Life is a condensation of instruction given by Ascended Master Saint Germain and other Ascended Masters, covering potent points, vital information, and instruction never before published. Certain points of law which might have proved difficult to understand under the old dispensation are completely clarified. The books will appeal to all readers. Those who are just getting acquainted with this type of teaching, those who are sincerely desirous of stepping on the path, and those who have traveled further along the way. Advanced disciples will not only discover a fresh approach to certain points, but will also find these books ideal to offer to those seekers who are in need of a constructive compilation of this sort. Most home problems will vanish if these books are placed in the hands of parents and their children. In the Aquarian age, even very young children will seek to understand the eternal verities, and they will not be content with a partial answer. They will want the truth. Man, Thomas Nope, New York, The Magic Mountain. Joseph and his brothers, keep these books in mind when you need another solid plank in the bridge between the old age and the new. For a while now we can still use the retrospective view so admirably expressed in Joseph and his brothers. But as Joseph and all the other great figures of history cycle back into incarnation and achieve new heights of spiritual greatness, we will see them in action now, and the past will fade from human memory. We will remember only the future, the goal which will complete our circle of evolution by uniting us to the only past worth grasping, our source. The Magic Mountain makes delightful reading at any time, but it belongs to a special group of books which tell in somewhat symbolical, yet extremely practical terms, the story of evolving man scaling his last mountain peak of consciousness, a peak that has for so long concealed from his view the effulgent glory of his father's house. Do not read this book until you have digested the paragraphs listed toward the end of this compilation, under the name of author James Ramsey Ullman, Morgan, Charles Macmillan, New York and London, spark and broke the fount in the river line, seek out a quiet spot and live with these books. Let their healing essence flow over you. Here is discipleship of the highest order expressed in books that reached bestseller popularity. The River Line was made into a play which had a short run in London, and as the writer seems to recall, it also laid an egg in New York. But that was not the fault of the play. It was presented in an era when theatergoers had acquired such jaded appetites that everything they consumed tasted like eggs, very scrambled and very stale. Now that we have lived through dark days, and the darker nights, of tawdry episode, let us relax and breathe the fresh, clean atmosphere created by the magic pen of Charles Morgan. Again, it should be kept in mind that the beating hearts of matters considered by this author are anchored in the last days of the Piscean Age. The rugged path of discipleship revealed in these stories presents an appalling picture at times, with the suffering disciple in the full grip of every neurosis in medical annals. The picture is correct, nevertheless, for a disciple achieves mastership only by learning to master all situation he meets in the outer world. Sloshing through Piscean puddles he meet with one abomination after another. If he was not exactly serene and clear-headed at all times, he can be forgiven for his off-the-beam moments. O'Neill, John J. Ives Washburn, Incorporated, New York City, Prodigal Genius. Here is the great story of the electrical age, founded by that Venusian genius, Nikola Tesla, who volunteered to take embodiment on this planet in years when life here was not fit for a pigeon, much less a man. And unspeakably putrid for a gentleman and a scholar. However, he stayed with it physically for 87 years, and then arranged to keep his eye on the situation from a higher and more pleasant vantage point among the ascended masters. Tesla went out of embodiment in 1943, and O'Neill followed him a few years later. Prodigal Genius was published in 1944 and has served until now as the only substantial record of Tesla's inventive achievements on this globe. However, in 1944, Kenneth Arnold had not yet made his famous sighting of spaceships which led to the flying saucer-conscious world of today. O'Neill probably knew nothing of Tesla's true origin, and from his writings in Prodigal Genius it is quite apparent that he hadn't even a slight suspicion that Tesla's great mission was a voluntary one on behalf of the forces of light. In Return of the Dove, this aspect of Tesla's role in the unfoldment of the divine plan is made clear. The fact then emerges that the relationship between Tesla and O'Neill was that of teacher and aspiring disciple, and it is likewise apparent that the relationship had to be continued on the inner planes. O'Neill had not yet achieved a clarity of consciousness and freedom from limitations which would have enabled him to remain in physical embodiment and receive teachings through overshadowing. The Aquarian Age civilization should reap rich benefits from this association between Tesla and his eager pupil, when O'Neill returns to the Earth plane from his sojourn in the realms of wisdom, and finds this happy planet to be once more a fertile spot for the application of constructive endeavors. Prince, Thomas the Bridge to Freedom, Box 5, Flower Tone, Pennsylvania. The seven mighty Elohim speak on the seven steps to precipitation. The seven beloved archangels speak memoirs of beloved Mary, mother of Jesus. The archangel Michael, his work and his help as the first ray, by its Chuan, El Moria the seventh ray, by its Chuan, Saint Germain the Bridge to Freedom, a monthly journal. Thomas Prince is an American pseudonym used by El Moria, Chuan of the first ray. He has recently presented several books through his publishing enterprise in Pennsylvania. The monthly journal, which is edited by Thomas Prince, presents writings by the seven Ray Chuans, and by their group leader, the Mahachuan, formerly the historical personage known as Homer, who gave the Iliad and the Odyssey to the world. Rochambe Congress of the United States of America, a commemoration, prepared by authority of the American Congress and the Congressional Library by Dep. Randolph Kaim. Rochambe, Father and Son, translation published by Henry Holt and Company, New York. First part by Jean Edmund Whelan, second part by the Vicomte de Rochambe. In the pattern of swiftly changing world events that formulates the Aquarian program of the new Lord of Civilization, Ascended Master sent Germain and his twin Ray, Portia, the goddess of justice, the name of Rochambeau will stand as a guiding beacon. This is a name to which our new age school children will turn in love and confidence, as they struggle to separate truth from that steaming bog of emotionalized fiction which our deluded educator dare to call history. The history of a redeemed humanity is now being written, but not by those who love to wallow in blood and gore, and certainly not by those misguided free willers who feel they are not really living it up unless they bathe daily in sweat and tears. Return of the Dove is a swift historical review covering the past 19 million years, and it will be a blessing to world consciousness if such a review can be accepted as a post-mortem to end all post-mortems. To continually dwell upon the sordid story of the past, and to continually hunger after juicy and rotten morsels of history, is not only useless but extremely dangerous. Such emotional and mental dawdling establishes darkness to this planet. Remember that thousands of these dark force tools are still in embodiment, and still contaminating the air we breathe with their emanations of hate and greed. Some fortunate disciples have enough light in their consciousness to just call quits with the past and transmute the etheric records which tie them to it. But the average person still craves for comprehension. He must have a clear, visual picture of the last 19 million years, and then take a good understanding look at it before he can generate enough courage to transmute and sever all links which bind him to nostalgic memories. Transmutation is achieved only through proper use of the seventh ray of the violet fire. This ray swung into manifestation in 1675. Francis Bacon had been prepared through many, many embodiments for his present great historical role as Chuan of the Seventh Ray and Lord of Civilization. He has the task of house-cleaning the globe of all laggards, and from this time on a laggard will be one who refuses to accept the ascension story, personally demonstrated by Jesus. The planet must be completely cleared of laggards and all their accumulation of filth, during the next 2,000 years. The reason for the present overpopulation of the globe is because we are trying to accommodate about 18 subraces of three root races on the planet. It simply cannot be done, and no ascended master would have attempted it. The abortive attempt was made by the free willers who desired to take all matters concerning creation away from God, and handle them in a high and mighty, and extremely brassy, Pentagon manner. Now that Ascended Master Saint Germain is back on the job in his role as Uncle Sam of America, the big global house cleaning is in full swing. This is not just a surface dusting, for even the etheric records, which some call the Akashic, are getting a thorough violet ray treatment. The etheric records of the world contain all the subconscious memories of all events on the globe, back to the beginning. The etheric body or the subconscious of each individual contains a similar record of all memories relating to that individual. Thus an individual is constantly adding to his own subconscious structure, and at the same time contributing to the global subconscious. Before the laggards came, these subconscious structures were perfect. After discord was introduced, the etheric records had to accurately register all disharmony as well as harmony. Now Saint Germain is house-cleaning certain etheric records with the aid of his disciples who, in former embodiments, were present when the etheric records were made. For instance, until a few years ago there existed a complete etheric record of the beginning of the Revolutionary War. In the ethers, the first shot was still coming out of the gun barrel, and any historian who wished to write on the subject of the war could, by mentally reflecting on the theme, tie in with the etheric vibrations. He could pick up such an accurate vibrational picture that he might well feel that he was there on the original scene, firing the first shot. In line with the Aquarian program, Ascended wished to remove all such discordant memories of great battle events, so that humanity might more easily forget war. Nearly all of the disciples who worked closely with Uncle Sam in the American and French revolutions are back in embodiment. With the aid of Washington, Lafayette, Benjamin Franklin, Rochambeau and many others, Saint Germain has visited certain historic spots, and together the group has transmuted the discord in the original etheric records. Thus the cleansed revolutionary records still stand, but they no longer give off a vibration of pain and discord. They do give off a true vibration of magnificent triumph, of glorious achievement, and of a cosmic victory gained by ascended masters working in collaboration with angels, elementals and men. All history of the future will date approximately from the late Francis Bacon period, with flashbacks to those great scenes of Bacon's earlier triumphs as Joseph, gentle guardian of Mary and the babe Jesus, as Columbus, setting his face toward America, the heart center of the globe, and as Uncle Sam, sitting in a secluded Boston garden, counseling with his disciples, pouring his great strength into Washington, and finally, when even that was not enough, calling upon the noble Rochambe, the valiant disciple who could lead French troops into America to save the beating heart of the world. In 1940, George Washington, back in embodiment for the last time to assist ascended master Saint Germain in the Aquarian program, made his ascension. The other great revolutionary leader, Rochambe, will continue to carry on outer world projects for Saint Germain. In 1907, the Congress of the United States of America compiled and published an impressive commemorative volume, honoring Rochambe as leader of the French auxiliary forces in the War of Independence. At the same time, a magnificent statue of Rochambe was unveiled in Lafayette Park, near the White House, in Washington, D.C. in 1936. Just 4 years before Washington made his ascension, a book was published in New York, entitled Rochambe, Father and Son. The first part was published earlier in France, and the second part was originally written by Rochambe's young son, who accompanied his father on the historical marches in America, and who had the foresight to keep a running diary of daily events. A foreword to Rochambe, Father and Son, was written by Gilbert Chouinard of Johns Hopkins University of Baltimore. It was in the area of Baltimore, south to Yorktown, Virginia, that Rochambe marshaled his strongest forces and achieved his brilliant victories that enabled the Duke d'Orléans to say, "Thanks to you, America is free." It is to be hoped that all Americans in this great land, this heart center of planet Earth, will remember those words, and repeat them in gratitude and in recognition of the magnificent comradeship shown by Saint Germain's stalwart disciples who went forward and prepared the way. Saint Germain, Saint Germain Press, Chicago, Unveiled Mysteries, The Magic Presence, The I Am Discourses. These three outstanding books were dictated by Ascended Master Saint Germain to Godfrey King in the years of the early 30s. King, a former historical personage associated with Saint Germain's newly established United States of America, completed his discipleship in this embodiment and made his ascension. The recording and publishing of these books rounded out his centuries of work on behalf of Saint Germain, and presented to readers a formulated concept of principles through which Ascended Master Saint Germain's new golden age will rise to untold heights of glory. Spalding, Baer T. DeVos & Company, 520 West 9th Street, Los Angeles 15. Life and Teaching of the Masters of the Far East, 5 volumes. All are online. Also to be listened to via YouTube. In presenting his 5-volume narrative on experiences during several years of living and learning among the great masters of the Himalayas, Mr. Spalding has emphasized his personal belief in the master's abilities to demonstrate the workings of the profound laws of the universe, which carry a promise that man on Earth will soon inherit the illumination that will let him learn to transcend death and find the way to eternal life. Steiner, Rudolf Anthroposophic Press, New York, Knowledge of the Higher World and Its Attainment. Rudolf Steiner was in many ways a great disciple, but he will be best remembered as an educator who wrote his own textbooks and then established schools in which his teachings could be presented, even in a world hostile to his basic concepts. Many readers will find the followers of Steiner somewhat fanatical in their zeal, but only the most determined and emphatic servers were able to stand up against Piscean dogmatism. So if you are inclined to the mistaken notion that Steiner was at heart an old-fashioned schoolmaster, just search through his early writings for one of his memorable statements. In effect, he said that the dark forces were always on guard to prevent people from becoming too alert mentally. He predicted that in the 20th century, improved conditions in education would lead the forces of evil to use poisonous chemicals to make the populace stupid. He said that the people would even give their approval to mass poisoning, for they would endorse and uphold fluoridation of the public water supply.